welcome everyone to Rockin' Nation Podcast. This is a brand new episode of Dive Cuts, which you may know is a top 10 SB Nation College podcast. We are on season 5, episode 34, I believe, here to talk about your Missouri Tigers and their basketball program. I am your host, Sam Snelling. With me, as always, from the wavy plains of Indiana, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, how are you?
I'm well. Hopefully we'll find something to discuss tonight, because we are in the doldrums. We are in the off-season doldrums officially now, where the highlight is guessing what numbers the newcomers are going to wear, and maybe praying that the gods give us scheduling news.
Yeah. We did get a little lucky, because I think Mosley was beginning of June, but normally June is a pretty rough month content-wise for the old college blog. If your baseball team is in the College World Series, which Missouri is not very often in, then you have stuff to talk about. Just from a overall athletic standpoint, but otherwise, like, everyone right now is just struggling for content. In fact, if you listen to the also brief before the box score podcast, you got to hear Nate and BK struggle to talk about and find subjects to talk about. They did a little preview of Kentucky, talked a little recruiting, roster movement, all that kind of stuff. We don't even have that much to talk about, mostly because after Isaiah Mosley committed, it's all sort of gone quiet. There's been a couple, I guess, little 2023 nuggets offers going out here and there. What was the kid's name? Gehrig Normund? Is that?
Yep.
Did I say that right?
Yep.
Really, what dad named his son Gehrig? Okay. Like, we get it. You like baseball. So he was on campus. I don't know, how easy it will be, Matt, for Mizzou to pluck a Texas kid out of Texas with a Texas offer. No, you were also kind of saying before the pod that it seems like Wisconsin is also in pretty heavy, and he is a white dude, and Wisconsin, they sure love their white guys. They're probably, without getting too into a Wisconsin pod, maybe the whitest, power conference roster, would you say?
St. Mary, well, if we're doing Power Five, yes. Yes, probably. That would be my guess, or Notre Dame, or
yeah, but even St. Mary's, like, all those guys are like Australian, so that only kind of counts.
I'm just gonna be quiet now. It's 3 minutes and 50 seconds into the pod, and we're already into dangerous ground here. we're just gonna move past this here. Yeah, Gehrig Normund visited last week. Mizzou was the leadoff visit for him. He was at Wisconsin over the weekend. He'll be headed to Oklahoma State. And then he's also going to take a visit to Texas. And that feels kind of like a Rubicon. If the Longhorns were to really, make a push there, would that probably tip the scales to him? That would be worth monitoring. But reporting, at least from the Wisconsin camp, seems to indicate that staff feels really good about where they sit with him right now. The more interesting question for me is, what happens with a Renton Page, who visited last month? He's also taken a visit to, I believe, USC, and Page is trying to get a visit. And he's also visited.
Is it a Renton? I was saying Arrington.
Arrington.
Like Arrington, but with just Aaron.
I would really appreciate a pronunciation guide on that one. But Mr. Page has taken two other visits to Cincinnati and to the University of Southern California, and is would like to visit Indiana, which is interesting because if you, you know, that would imply that Indiana has yet to say, yeah, you can come on down. But those are kind of the four schools involved there. I tend to look at that one just because I think that one tilts a little bit more kind of to Mizzou's wheelhouse. Paige is from, I think, suburban, the Cobb County area, and plays at Wheeler High School. Really, really packed kind of conference.
Atlanta.
Yeah, the Atlanta area, the Atlanta metro area. Sorry, I thought I was still in the South there. He's out of the Atlanta metro. CY has a lot of connections and experience in that recruiting ground. So that kind of feels like a more natural sort of, you know, first commit to land a fast rising kid who didn't have any offers coming into the spring. Missouri got in there relatively early. The staffer has a good relationship and has contacts in the area. They got him on campus relatively early and ahead of the June period. So, you know, not to say that that commitment's imminent, but if I were to pick the two 23 kids that they've had on campus so far, I'd probably think Paige would probably make me more optimistic. And that's a position of need for Missouri. Missouri's going to need, you know, to fill in some front court spots, I think, next year. If I'm looking at the math, yeah, they're going to have one or two spots at a minimum they need, kind of a four, you know, at the four spot or five spot. So those are really the only two kind of visits that are on deck. There's been reports that Jordan Butler, Jordan Burks, Papakante, and maybe like a Parker Friedrichsen might take visits, but we haven't seen any reporting of dates or sort of official word there. And sometimes those visits even kind of go into the fall a little bit. They kind of coincide with football weekends and things like that. So, you know, they got two guys on campus early, two fast risers in the spring, which is good. And maybe they're in good position with one of them coming out of that stretch. And, you know, we'll see what they can do kind of going into the fall. And we still have the July period in play where I think you can still maybe try and find some guys if you have them on your board for scouting looks. Maybe some guys blow up and you can kind of make a move in July on some guys. And they also extended a couple of JUCO offers last week too. So the 23 class, we can talk about this. It's kind of not awkward, but it's sort of a unique, you know, recruiting board right now. Sam, would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that I wrote about, and you know, like I think it's worth sort of pointing out, I guess, in spoken word as well as print. You know, that the way the recruiting goes, like the 2022 spring class is your first real putting together a recruiting class is usually a bit of a train wreck, and it can work out. And I think overall, like, I think we're pleased with what, you know, Gates and his staff have done this spring as far as, you know, kind of getting some good players and excited to play. Like, you know, I think you and I both like Noah Carter a lot. They've obviously taken care of their ball handling issues, getting Mosley and keeping Aiden Shaw, getting Diarra. All these things are like, you know, positive steps. But 2023, like, you don't really have the established relationships. I think you can get away with that and get that initial sort of spring class, because a lot of the kids that are available in the spring are, you know, kids that are looking for a landing spot. So they're looking for a landing spot. You're looking for players to, you know, land and, you know, with your spots. And, but when you're talking about like the kids that are going to sign in the fall, like that's a lot kind of tougher area. So what you're trying to do is sort of locate, you know, guys that are going to maybe be fast risers and under recruited. And maybe they don't rise up too fast where, you know, like Kentucky or, you know, Kansas or, you know, schools like that try to get involved. And then what you're really trying to do is build up your relationships so that you can sort of start stacking classes with 2024 and then 2025. And I think I think you could easily point out and look at the board of the 2023 offers, 2024, 2025, and see that like they've been really active in 24 and 25. And you know, like the board exists in 23. So I don't want to say like they haven't been doing anything. Like it's definitely there, but I think they're trying to figure out exactly what kind of players they can get in. And then I also think, like, you know, because we're still in this weird area where you're not exactly sure who is and who isn't going to have a COVID year. I mean, like Kobe Brown, Nick Honor, and Isaiah Mosley could all come back next year, even though they're all listed as seniors. Like those guys have all you know, played and can extend their college career another year if they really want. So you don't really know exactly where your needs are going to be until those guys maybe make some decisions, or maybe some of those guys you want to kind of make the decisions for them. So yeah, the 2023 class is going to be a little interesting. We'll just say that.
Yeah, they've got four
spots. Not accusatory. And
No. Right now, they've got four spots. They've got three guys who are going to exhaust eligibility, and they're holding one scholarship. So they've got four spots. If, again, how you classify positions can change based on where you think guys are. This is all sort of speculative on our part, but you could say they're probably going to need, you know, two wings and a combo guard, or two combo guards and a wing, and probably at least one post. So basically three guards and a big, most likely, is what they will need. Now, it depends on, you know, Noah Carter has said pretty consistently, you know, for the next 2 years, I'm really excited here. So let's just say Noah is sticking. That probably caps you at, you know, six scholarships going into next spring. You know, we can presume that Mosley's probably going to want to move on and begin earning a paycheck. So really it kind of comes down to, you know, what do you think?
Don't disregard that NIL money. He's
no, but I'm just saying, like, given
professional paycheck.
But to me, it's really what they do with the ball handling of East and Honor. You know, do those guys want to, you know, use another year? But realistically, you're at four. You could go up to eight if all those guys bounce. The median is probably six slots. And the other thing is, you're still going to have guys, you know, with COVID years available. You know, this staff has shown that it's not afraid to go into the JUCO ranks. So the 23 board is almost sort of like this weird, like sort of like it's kind of a patch or quilt of guys that they have right now. They really came out like gangbusters in April and into the first 2 weeks of May offering guys. And like the guys they offered were, you know, some guys that Charlton Young had been recruiting at Florida State and had some relationships with. There were some guys that they offered that were fast risers. And, you know, kind of through those first 6 weeks of the spring period. And then they really didn't offer anybody. They've only, since May 16, they've only sent out, it looks like, three or four prep offers. They've offered two JUCO guys in the past week. It's a weird mix right now. It's kind of guys that CY's recruited. It's guys that blew up early in the spring. And then maybe we're trying to, you know, work some JUCO contacts. None of the guys right now are probably, you know, if you look at just the composite rating, not a lot of these guys are, you know, straight up top 50 or 60 level kids. They're kind of borderline there. The guys they've gotten to visit are guys that, you know, fans would look at their composite rating and say, man, those look an awful lot like Konzo Martin recruits. And that would be true. So it's a weird sort of mishmash right now. And to your earlier point, when they started rebuilding this board, it was probably 10 months into usually in like an 18-month recruiting cycle or something like that. And they were having to get guys in and get a staff organized while, you know, backfilling the current roster. So this is a way of saying, you know, they're going to hopefully, I think, have to do a, you know, not hopefully, but most likely this may be a spackle job again in 23. The 24 cycle is really, I think, where you're starting to see kind of the shift, because, you know, I think I'm looking at it right now, they offered, I'm counting it here, this is why the spreadsheet's handy. In April, they sent out 11 offers to 24 kids. In the month of June alone, they've sent out 15, which is coincides kind of with the period when they can contact kids directly. So the board has, the kind of way the building of these boards has been structured is they spent the first 6 weeks or so as a staff, you know, kind of hammering together and duct taping together a 23 board. And then they started really going to work on the 24 board and the 25 boards. And the 25 class, I think we've mentioned this before, I can't recall Consul Martin ever offering more than maybe two or three guys who are rising sophomores. They're at 10 in the 2025 class. So you can really see, I think, kind of the philosophy here of start building relationships now, start getting into the mix with their those guys. And if you look at the composite ratings, like the top end of the composite ratings here, they continually get higher the farther out they go here. So I think what they've, to your earlier point again, I think what they're recognizing is there's a limit or a ceiling on what they can do, you know, in 23. It gets a little higher in 24. And now you're really going to start to kind of, I think, see the staff fully try and flex its muscles in 25 with some of those higher end guys. And hopefully by then they'll have the on-court results that will help a little bit more. But it's been interesting, to say the least, to watch them sort of construct this stuff and build it out. What we do know for certain is they certainly, at least from what we can tell publicly, have a higher volume of contacts and offers going out than the last staff did. So that's certainly been something to kind of wrap our head around. We kind of wondered what the staff's approach would be. And yeah, they're in the volume business.
Yeah, and it's also, I think that's a little bit of it is figuring out kind of who you can and sort of can't recruit. And I think for, you know, I think that's something that I think for all of Consul Martin's sort of, you know, issues and all the things that he sort of failed at, I think he had a really good sort of idea of like who he could recruit and what sort of players like Mizzou on its own will attract, just, you know, with the name on the shirt versus, you know, what kind of like, you know, personality fit and all that kind of stuff. And I think Martin had a really good, clear idea on what that was. And I kind of feel like Dennis Gates is going to have to figure that out. I expect he will. Like, I think Dennis is a really smart guy. I think he's, I really think he's going to figure this out quickly. You know, but there is a period where you have to kind of understand the job that you're in. You know, he was leaving Florida State, like, really when they could get into anyone's living room. And it's probably going to take a little bit for them to, you know, you can always work your relationships with like the AAU coaches and the high school coaches and, you know, make sure that everybody, you know, in whatever, Atlanta, Charlotte, all those kinds of places are going to, you know, sort of vouch for you. But, you know, but the familiarity with the program and the kids that you're trying to recruit is still going to be a little bit of a speed bump. And so I think, you know, Gates is probably figuring some of that out right now. And as time goes, he's going to have a much better idea, like the kind of kids. And I just don't think we're going to be seeing them offering, you know, 50, 60 kids a class, you know, in perpetuity. Like eventually it's going to settle back down. They're trying to kind of get in to a lot of doors right now and figuring out kind of where, you know, the Mizzou footprint is and how they can kind of expand that. And I think that's sort of the goal.
Yeah. And if you look at the 24 class, I think I said before we came on, they only offered, they've called a lot of top 30 kids, but they've probably only offered one top 15 kid and maybe two or three top 30 kids. So I think a lot of it is calling it, getting your name out, getting relationships built, you know, like you're saying, kind of feeling out, you know, where you can get some traction, at what tier you can kind of begin to get some feedback. Because they called, I'm looking at it right here, they called pretty much every kid in the top 20 of all the major recruiting services. No offers went out. The only guys that are, the only offers that have gone out in that tier are to Ryan Jones, a kid out of Gainesville, Florida, and Ace Bailey, a kid from Chattanooga who's, you know, now playing in the Atlanta area at McEachern and with Team AOT, and a kid in Paul McNeil, and that was an offer that went out last week to Garner Roden out of North Carolina. Spots where the staff has long-standing relationships, and then there's kind of a break, and then they really don't get back into it until they get into the 30s and 40s. And then it's an offer to James Scott out of St. Reed in Chicago through Mean Streets, and then Dallas Thomas, who plays for Little Rock Parkview, go Patriots, love that gym, great place to go watch a game, and Brad Beal Elite. Like, so you're not really seeing them. Like, if you're looking at probably top 50 offers, they've got maybe five in the 2024 class or that are in there. So they're not, and they've got 30 plus offers out. So maybe only one in six are top 50 kids at this point. So that's, I sort of agree with you. And I think that they're calling around, they're validating, they're seeing where they can get in, what the response is. The one thing I do think it's interesting is, and I said this in our Slack today, was the volume helps because you can sort of see the forest now instead of just looking at individual trees. They've called, like, if you look at the areas where they've been, states have been most active, it's been Florida, Tennessee, Georgia, Texas, and but the a lot of the states where they're getting, they're sending out solid offers are in Florida, Tennessee, Texas, Arkansas, Illinois, and Missouri. Spots where their staff has long worked, where they've got connections. And if you look at, you know, people have kind of decried, you know, we're not seeing a lot of like local offers. Well, the 23 and 24 classes in Missouri, you know, are a little bit weak. You know, it really doesn't start to get better until 2025. But if you look at the AAU programs that sort of are in Missouri's nearby footprint, Brad Beal Elite, six kids have scored offers. Six Mocan kids have scored offers. And three KC Run GMC kids have scored offers. So they've sent out 15 offers to prospects in 23, 24, and 25 from local programs. They've been really active with programs like Game Elite, which is based in Atlanta. Mean Streets, which is in Chicago, and the Arkansas Hawks, where Dickie Nuts, one of his sons, used to be a coach with that AAU program. It's an Adidas-based program. Then they've kind of gone to the Indy Heat, which, and then a couple of Florida programs and Knight Riders and Florida Rebels, which are South Florida-based and overlap where Charlton Young is from and where he kind of worked. So you can see that they're feeling, I think you're seeing them be kind of expansive and call around. And everyone's seeing the sheer volume and going, oh my God, what are they doing? We're not seeing a lot of Missouri kids or like regional kids. But when you get down and you really look at where the concentration of offers are, they're working areas, I think, where they've got good connections. So I think that they're trying to feel things out, but they're also, I think, trying to get guys in. You know, Kyle Smith-Peters, you know, you see the offers that go out is really working a lot of those kind of closer to home programs, you know, even into like Indiana and Kentucky a little bit. But they're letting Charlton and Dickie Nutt sort of work recruiting grounds where they've got a kind of a history. So I agree the volume's going to come down, but I do think early on, if people are like, oh my God, you know, what are they doing locally? Local talent's ebbed a bit, but they're still really putting an emphasis on kind of those regional programs that are going to have to be feeders for them, you know, moving forward. So it's been interesting to watch them sort of balance those priorities out a little bit.
Yeah, the local thing, I mean, I feel like has always kind of ebbed and flowed.
It ebbed when Mike Anderson was here.
Yeah, and you know, like there was a good run, you know, particularly from like St. Louis, you know, there from what, like 2015, 16,
to 2020 probably.
Yeah, up until the last few years, but it's certainly thinned out, and there aren't a lot of high level prospects coming out. So yeah, I mean, it is one of those things that, you know, but at the same time, you know, there's some Vashon kids who are in the 2025 class who already have Missouri offers. So, you know, and Aaron Rowe in Columbia, you know, Missouri offer. So it looks like it is going to kind of pick up here in 2025. But in the meantime, yeah, you try to sort of build relationships. You've got you know, Wichita and Memphis, and I mean, there's plenty of regional schools, and you know, this Parker Friedrichsen kid is, you know, from Oklahoma and
Tulsa area.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of you know, regional recruits that sort of, you know, like I think, you know, where Missouri has always, you know, traditionally been able to kind of build its base is, you know, it's not really landing Michael Porter Jr.'s, but, you know, landing guys that are kind of in that 75 to 150 range and really kind of, you know, developing them. And obviously, you know, the NIL and transfer portal has changed a lot about how college basketball is, you know, is done recruiting wise these days. And I still think there's a lot of figuring out that, you know, college staffs are going to have to live with some of those things and figure them out as they go along. But I still think that if you're able to build a good program, you're going to keep your core intact because you're going to be able to keep them happy. They're going to be playing. And if they're playing and you're winning games, then the NIL money will be there. And so I think all those sort of things sort of work together. And you know, if Missouri can sort of find a way to sort of establish and keep that base, you know, be able to, you know, mine guys that turn into Marcus Denman and, you know, and stuff like that, then I, you know, I think eventually you'll get to the point where recruiting and recruiting at a higher level, certainly will become easier.
Yeah.
I would hope anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think to me, a good example is what they're trying to do in Chicago where, you know, Illinois for a couple of years is, you know, usually tried to have somebody on staff who's on good terms with Mac Irvin Fire. Well, Missouri already has put offers out to no kids for Mac Irvin Fire, but it's put offers out to Mean Street kids. It's called about two other ones, you know, and that's Ty Street's program there. Ty Street's also played at Michigan. So sometimes he gets Michigan kids in the door there. One of them was Trey Jackson, a former Missouri player who kind of made that, you know, trip down from the Detroit area to play for Ty Streets. But that's a program that, you know, that's produced some Division I talent that's kind of gone more Big East. They produced some Big Ten guys. In fact, guys will kind of wind up at DePaul in quite a bit. But, you know, is there a path there to get into Chicago through that route? You know, is that a, you know, potential pipeline that you could begin to work? You know, I think the other thing people have to keep in mind is Brad Beal Elite in MOCAN are now more regional programs than strictly local. Like Brad Beal is pulling from Arkansas and Tennessee, and, you know, MOCAN is now even like robbing and poaching guys from St. Louis and getting guys, you know, out of Kansas and getting also guys out of Tennessee and kind of Oklahoma. So they're a little bit more regional programs now. So the makeup of those rosters isn't like 80%, you know, St. Louis metro area kids, or even 60% sometimes. Sometimes it's less than half. But those are still pipelines that matter, you know, because they're in your state and usually still the best top-end prospects that, you know, come out of those two areas and feeder systems wind up with those programs. So it's I think the landscape has changed a little bit over the past 3 or 4 years too, where it's not, you know, when you say MOCAN or BBE, you're not talking about like a heavy heavy presence there. Casey and Run GMC still probably is. Like, I'd still say that's mostly like Kansas and Missouri kids. But it's definitely not the same level of concentration as it used to be. And so recruiting locally, I think, has changed a little bit too in terms of how we talk about it. But really interested in what that 25 class is going to look like in terms of how it shakes out and whether the two Vashon kids kind of, you know, continue on a trajectory where they might be top 100 level guys. Rose been touted as a potential like top 40-ish kid. Does he kind of stay on that trajectory? If that happens, then you've kind of got a class that, you know, could be kind of a watershed one for you locally. So that's really, I think, where you're building towards at this point.
Yeah, I just pulled up the 2022 boys 17 under Brad Beal elite roster. I mean, these things are rarely 100%.
The transfer portal opens at midnight on Sunday for AAU teams.
What, there's three?
Yeah.
I think just three St. Louis kids out of, I don't know, 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Several Arkansas kids, because, I mean, Layden Blocker is an Arkansas kid, despite the fact he's going to Sunrise Christian in Wichita. I don't know where Lathan Somerville is from. Do you?
I do not.
He's going to the Skill Factory.
That's in Atlanta.
Which is where Missouri got Jordan Wilmore from, right?
Yeah. But the Skill Factory has like three or four teams. It has like an elite team, a prep team, and like it.
Somerville is from Peoria.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So not a lot of Missouri kids. I mean, they do have, Des Wyatt from Helias, who's also going to go to the Skill Factory. And a kid from Chaminade. So, like, there's always a kid from Chaminade. Yeah. And then, you know, their two best players last year, Brad Beal elite, were, Nick Smith, who's Little going Rock. To Arkansas from Arkansas, and Brandon Miller, who's from Tennessee, going to Alabama, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that right?
We saw a lot of flow westward to Mocan. Like, I was surprised at just how many, like, there were like two Chaminade kids, including Terrace Reed was over there. John Bowl left BBE to go west to play for Mocan, which was sort of a surprise. Davian Bradford, Luke Kasupke, Dylan Branson, like, guys over the last couple of years, it's something we've talked about kind of privately. It's really surprising to see kind of that exodus westbound to Mocan. But even now, Mocan's kind of reaching into like Oklahoma to get a guy like Parker Friedrichsen. And, you know, they've gone into Arkansas a little bit now. And they've kind of got a relationship with Link Academy and Branson. So that's sort of become an evolving relationship to the West. Like I said, if I had to say one's like still kind of pure, like when I looked at the rosters last year, mostly heavy local with kind of that feeder system of 15U, 16U, 17U, it would be Run GMC in Kansas City, which is on the Under Armour circuit. MPJ Elite is out, and that's kind of that's a Puma back team, but it's playing on independent circuits. And, you know, so there are programs in that, you know, are still heavily local, but the kind of two tent pole ones on the EYBL are less local than they used to be.
So do you have any other recruiting bits you want to discuss, or do you want to move on and talk about uniform numbers?
Not really. I mean, I've tried to watch some tape of these guys, but I think the one thing that's changed, and this is more like behind the scenes stuff, is with Zoe's sort of volume and the way Zoe's kind of, and this just goes to our point about a coaching change. You know, within the first one or two cycles, you can kind of figure out how Zoe and his staff structured, you know, their operations. And you kind of knew who the four or five priorities were right out of the chute. And, you know, they did what fans wanted. They focused heavily on their backyard. So if you knew, you know, kind of the top four or five guys in the next three classes, you could really kind of pay attention to that. you knew at least through the first 4 years that Cornell Mann was going to throw darts in Michigan. You didn't know if they were going to connect, but you knew he was going to try and put offers out there and try and work those connections a little bit. And, you know, so you kind of could focus on 6 or 7 names in a class and feel good. You could watch tape on them. You could track them. You could really look at the stats and kind of get them, I'm going to say, a more longitudinal look on them, which was really helpful. This staff is more about volume. And again, we don't really know kind of where they found their pockets or their of talent that they can get. We don't know kind of what level they're working at. And we don't really know kind of the players they want. You know, I think, you know, we've watched a lot of Cleveland State and we've watched a lot of Florida State, but we've got to kind of see a couple of rosters and a couple of recruiting cycles to really figure it out. So I've watched some tape of guys, like I've watched tape of Garrick Norman. I've watched tape of Aaron Page, of Jordan Butler and Papa Conte. I really like Page. You know, I'm going to hold my thoughts on Norman because it seems like that might be one that's drifting out of view. But yeah, it's been a little bit weird because normally I'm spending June like trying to digest some film on guys. And right now it's just sort of like, let's see what they do in 23. Let's see what the roster looks like and what they need to shop for. So I feel a little bit lazy not watching as much film, but I'm trying to also be smart about where I put my time and sort of evaluate guys. So I'm sorry to anyone listening, if you're coveting really, really myopic Twitter threads of video from guys. I'm just sort of observing and looking at the macro view of how this staff operates for the moment.
Yeah, I did watch a little bit of Garrick today, and yeah, looks pretty good. And then you ruined all that by basically telling me that you don't think it's going to happen. So I wasted my time, Matt. Wasted my time.
Did you watch any of Paige?
I did several months ago, actually. Like maybe time is a construct. Shortly after they offered him, I watched some stuff that was available, but nothing. He looked like a good prospect. I'm in favor of athletic 6'8", 6'9", level, you know, big men.
I like his hands. But that guy catches, it doesn't matter, bad passes, good passes, he usually snags them. I think he's got pretty good spatial awareness. Seems to understand where his body is and how to maneuver it pretty well. He's not just, you know, he's got good size and good kind of, you know, he's got a sturdy frame on him, but you'll watch him sort of when he gets in the air, he may go up at an awkward angle, but he does a good job sort of locating himself in space. And there are some finishes that look awkward, that are awkward, that he makes look pretty easy because he's just got a good sense of where he is and what his body's trying to do. I think Watkins and I were geeking out on his like footwork. He sets really good screens, understands how to, you know, get out of them. He's got really good timing. If you watch him in some pick and rolls, he understands, you know, when he needs to, you know, sort of hold, you know, and wait for the, you know, the drop coverage to commit and, you know, then go and give himself a space. He's really, you know, I don't think he's a guy who you throw the ball to on the block and let him post. He's not like a pick and pop guy yet, but runs the floor really hard, can get rim runs, you know, good weak side rebounder, good timing off the floor there. I'm probably being way too myopic for a guy who we don't know coming here, but a lot of stuff that you like to see from a big. A lot of things that I like, not the same size as Jeremiah Tillman, but just a lot of the same things I liked about Tilly. Just good hands, good feet, good spatial awareness, good laterally. Looks like he can slide a little bit if he's got to play in pick and roll. So, well, on the whole, not a bad looking prospect. We'll see if he comes here.
So I think your number spoiler tweet had one wrong.
Yeah, I think 45 is going to be my Mayak. and
Majak, Magic Man.
Majak, yeah. Yeah. That Majak is, I think, is off. I don't think he's number 45. I think he is 45. Yeah. I don't think Diarra is.
Correct, yeah.
And
what we can see, it does look like Sean East is going to wear Blizzy Blake's 55,
mm-hmm.
which we were kind of joking on Slack about. It seems appropriate for a point guard who likes to transfer to different schools.
Yeah. Sean's a traveling man. Has been everywhere. I feel bad spoiling that, but it was, they've put out, they have a video clip where all the guys are kind of dancing around in a huddle and you can see all the numbers. So
yeah.
Yeah, Kobe Brown.
They release, like, you know, not just the video, but there's, like, you know, images of practice and stuff, and it's like, okay, like, you can kind of see what they're wearing.
Yeah. So I have Kobe Brown at 24, Caleb Brown at 31, Noah Carter keeps number 35, Ryan DeGray goes back to number 13. He wore that in high school. Sean East is 55. Golston.
What did DeGray wear last year?
23, I think.
Who wore 13?
Was it Boogie who wore 13 last year?
I thought Boogie was like zero.
I'm sure we could look the roster up, but Sean East is 55, DeAndre Golston number 4, Trey Gamillion number 2, Des Moy Hodge number 5, Nick Honor number 10, Aiden Shaw number 23, and in press release photos, Isaiah Mosley has worn number 11, but we will see if that's the actual number that he keeps. And the walk-ons are wearing, the other two walk-ons are wearing 41. That's Sternberg, and Jackson Francois is wearing 42. So there's your number news, folks. I know you are just waiting with bated breath to know the numbers for the guys on the roster, but that appears to be what they are. Diarra, the mystery man, though. We will have to see what he's wearing.
You gonna take a guess?
No.
They've got him in a doing a squat, but
he's wearing a t-shirt.
No uniform. Yeah, no uniform present.
He wore 23 at JUCO. That's not an option this year. Big guys usually wear numbers north of 30.
So he should be like 2.
I'd be fine with that. I like it when bigs kind of, you know, mix it up a little bit. I'll say 32 just to flip it. He'll flip the 2 and the 3, and he'll wear 32. And
okay,
so that's my guess. Probably poor, but that's what I'm gonna go. No, Boogie wore number 5 last year. Boogie was number 5. That's all
right. That's right.
I remember that. Mark Smith was 13 forever, so that's who I associate it with. But man, we could do for some scheduling news too. That's the other thing. If Rocco, the schedule guy on Twitter, wants to send out where Mizzou's playing, that would be great. We know they're playing 3 games right now. I think they close out the Liberty 2-for-1 at home this year. So nice. That's 4 games. Doesn't look like an MTE is in the cards. So they probably have 8 other games that have to schedule. 3 of these games are at home. 1 is a neutral game against Illinois. So I imagine they play
Kansas at home.
Iowa State at home. Liberty at home.
Iowa State.
And then they have bragging rights on a neutral floor. So they've got to probably get 2 more road games scheduled. So maybe they're in the middle of trying to line up some home and home series that they'll announce, and then they'll just backfill with some bye games. And Caleb Brown wore 13 last year, so Caleb is flipping the numbers and going to 31. So that's
interesting.
Yeah. And if Mo Diarra took 32, it's available because Jordan Wilmore wore that one. So
Do we want to put that on him?
You know, maybe he'll breathe new life into it. But yeah, we successfully you know, tacked on 7 minutes of this podcast. Do we want to get out of here? It's at 45.
I'm surprised we made it this far. If there's anything that you want us to talk about in the meantime, I do think like I wanted to give some time before we ask the top eight question. It's going to be really interesting this year because I do think he's going to play a lot of guys. But I always want to know who's going to be in the top eight. So who's going to garner the top eight most minutes. That question will probably be coming here next week. Maybe we can talk about that next time. But yeah, if you have any questions, just tweet at Matt on Twitter. You can follow him at MattJHarris85. You can send me those tweets if you want at Sam P. Snelling. But yeah, let's get out of here. Thanks everybody for tuning in. If you like this, you probably make sure you are subscribed to the podcast feed wherever you download and listen to your podcast. Apple Podcasts, Google Play Store, and then you also get the excellent Before the Box Score podcast. I think we also have a couple other bonus podcasts coming here, hopefully, before the summer wraps up with some interesting other Rockin' Nation Mizzou Athletics content. So make sure that you are subscribed in order to get all those fun podcasts right to your mobile device, right? Your phone. Mm-hmm. That's it. We're going to get out of here. Matt and I will be back in 2 weeks. And until then, thanks for tuning in.